Welcome to the IT Babble Podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It is episode 3 of season 1 of IT Babble. I hope everybody's staying warm out there. Tony, it was snowing today here.
What?
Yeah, it was 46 degrees on Saturday, and now we had snow, and the roads, it's not a lot of snow, but it's enough to make the roads icy, and I saw a lady go off the road and into a tree. Yeah, she was only going, she was trying to brake, but she wasn't going to stop in time to hit the car, and she was going to hit the car in front of her, so she swerved to go into the ditch. And there was a tree there. By the time she hit the tree, she was going probably about 5 miles an hour. So I think she was okay, probably minimal damage to her car. So, but just, you know. Ooh, yeah.
Pro tip with modern bumper technology, I think she should have just rolled into the car in front of her. But that's just me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think she, because I wasn't expecting the roads have been, you know, snowy, but I could stop. And so
she was going slow because modern bumpers would have actually not hurt the people in the car in front of her and probably would have cushioned her, stopped her.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I do the same thing. Like you never, it's not, if people are like, look, your car's safe, you can hit another car. You're never going to do that, right? You're going to swerve.
You're going to swerve.
Don't worry. Look, you can take it. We've tested these cars. Take the hit.
Just bam.
No one does that. I think all safety tests should really just be what happens if I swerve into a ditch and hit a tree.
Yeah.
That should just be the whole safety test. Because the cars aren't designed to get out of ditches. Doesn't that kind of baffle your mind? Like, we haven't come up with a way, like, okay, hit this button and it'll help your car get out of the ditch. I mean, no one's even tried.
Yeah. Or out of mud or something like that, or out of, you know.
I mean, I watched M1 Abrams get out of like a mud ditch. If it can do it, Patrick, with its jet engine, our cars can do it.
We can do it too. I'm all for it. That sounds like a big moneymaker.
Drive safe there in Indianapolis.
By 10 o'clock, all of this will be done. The snow plows will be out, and they will have salted the roads, and everything will be fine.
You know, you drive, you have a, like a Volkswagen SUV, right?
Yeah. I got a Tiguan.
You should have like a snowplow fitted on the front of that thing. It'd be cool.
It might flip it over. it's not what you would call,
carbon fiber or something lightweight. No. Strong.
You know, when we go on those camping trips and our friend Frank would go, hey, anybody can come on this camping trip. It's Yaris friendly. I think my car is a couple steps above the Yaris. I don't think you would take it into the sands, into the dunes of Dubai. But
is my microphone too loud or too quiet? I thought it was a little too quiet last week, so I turned up the gain a little bit.
No, you're good. And in fact, I turned you up a little bit as well. So I think we're okay.
Okay,
man, we got a good agenda, all from Tony. I was just too busy watching football this weekend, so I didn't.
I figured that I didn't know who Patrick was rooting for. I thought it could be the Bengals, so I didn't want to ask him to do any work today.
No, it's okay. I like both teams, and it was a really good game. Came down to last second field goal, and really both teams, either team could have won that game. It could have gone either way. It was a really good game to watch. It was enjoyable.
Our friend Keith blames every close Bengals loss on the refs. You should know that. I was like, dude, tough loss. And he's like, yeah, the officials didn't give us anything.
That was
his first comment.
It did seem like they were a little, they were playing in Kansas City. That's one thing. And they did seem a little biased towards the.
Don't the officials come from all over? Or do they just come from Kansas City?
No, I think they come from all over. But, I mean, you got the hometown crowd. The refs don't want to be lynched, you know.
I guess so. Okay.
Anyway, but we've got a good agenda here. We've got a very good agenda.
Yeah, I think so, too. And wait, one more thing, though.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this last night because, as people may or may not know, Patrick is a huge Chuck Norris fan. And I started noticing.
Yeah, that's true.
People were posting these Joe Burrow memes trying to make him as tough as Chuck Norris. And I think that could have worked against him.
Yeah. You don't mess with the Chuck. I mean.
No, and you can't take Chuck's, like, I mean, you're not as tough as Chuck. Come on.
Nobody's as tough as Chuck.
They're going to find out that Chuck Norris was at the stadium and went into the parking garage and kicked it and caused the field goal to vibrate or something like that. That's what's going to happen.
You wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it, you know. And when all these people are talking about, like, climate change and things, really, they just need to go ask Chuck Norris to make things right. I mean, I'm sure a simple request like that, he'd be easy to fix the climate with, like, a roundhouse kick or something.
No one's asked him.
No one's asked him.
He doesn't do things unless you ask him.
That's right.
He's that kind of guy.
Yeah. I love it.
All right.
That's our Chuck Norris, man. That's going to be our artwork. Did you like the Tony Danza artwork, Tony?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Oh man, Tony Danza. Anyway, we have a good one. Apple touchscreen.
Yeah,
I'm curious about this one here. You want to talk about ed tech scammers on LinkedIn? I'm not on LinkedIn, so I can't wait. But is it really a cash cow? And Tony, before you get started, because you got a webinar coming up.
Yes.
I attended a webinar about ChatGPT, and I'm just going to, just real quick, it's hosted by the Indiana Department of Education, and I'm going to post that link on IT Babble soon, you can watch it.
I am doing a webinar tomorrow and Wednesday. It's the same topic. The first, I'm really not focusing on myself, so I'm working today to condense all my information down to about a 10-minute presentation, and the rest of the time we're going to talk about citations, plagiarism, kind of long-term uses and implications, and I'm hoping the people who are participating are going to do that. My part of the webinar is very focused on something known as the CIA triad. Now, that sounds like some kind of horrible operation the CIA is running. It is not.
It does. It sounds like some deep state stuff there.
Yeah. It stands for confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And you rate services, software, risk, whatever, against this triad. And you can basically score it and say, this is a good viable service or product. This is not a good viable service or product.
What was the I stand for? What did the I stand for?
Confidentiality.
Yep.
Integrity and availability.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. I'm just putting it in the show notes there so people don't think that that we're trying to, I don't know, run an op on them or something.
So hold on, and I'll send you a link really quick.
All right. Perfect. Yeah. Put in show. Send through Skype there.
Yeah. Well, I'll paste it on the agenda, Patrick.
Oh, even better. Even better.
Wait, what just happened?
You just put it. Oh, that's okay. You can put it anywhere. I can move it.
Put it at the bottom. I don't even. It's at the. Where did it go? even though I'm doing this webinar that should be sophisticated, I can't use a Google Doc. There we go.
There it is. Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. So I'm going to focus on that. I'm not going to throw out my conclusions, but. Here's something that might interest you, Patrick. I did a comparison of how it presents data in the browser versus how Google Chat presents data in the browser. And I can tell you this ChatGPT beta free version is it just doesn't care about security at all. I was like, whoa. And however, I'm not going to slam it completely. I did a full experiment, so I'm going to say, look, in terms of the service, it's not doing anything malicious. But if I wanted to create like something that I could trick someone to load into their browser, I could manipulate their chat in real time, or I could take their chat, the whole thing, copy it.
Yeah, because it's open source, right?
No, that's what I mean. Like, let's say I'm chatting with you right now in Google Chat.
Mm-hmm.
It's nearly impossible for me to write a malware that will copy our conversation so I can read it.
Yeah,
like, steal it.
Yeah, okay.
This thing, though, no. It's really easy to do. You could literally just, if you could get, you have to get somebody to install like the malware. Okay, you do. But if they would install it in the browser, you could extract their entire conversation history. And I just come back to not teachers using it or whatever. I'm thinking about, what if your head of school's using it to like work on an HR problem?
Yep. Yeah.
That, see, this is the kind of thing I'm thinking about. So that's going to be my presentation. It's going to be pretty concise. And then hopefully people will have a good conversation about it. And then Wednesday morning before my webinar, I'm interviewing a developer who's using the ChatGPT to write comments automatically for teachers.
Oh, wow. Now that's an interesting thing.
I'm actually, I'm releasing stuff more slowly, but I'm trying to, you know, cover all my bases. Like, I want to talk to somebody who is smart enough to implement this thing for a commercial purpose. And I asked them a bunch of security questions, and they sent me like 2 pages of information back, which I'm going to go through, because they're using the commercial implementation.
I imagine so it's far more secure and more powerful and everything.
Yeah, it's different. It's different. So that's why I'm trying to cover all my bases. I really want to understand it. So yeah, those are the webinars, and I will put both webinars on IT Babel for people. I've let every participant know the webinars will be public. So I'm posting them publicly, and unless something horrific happens, I'm not editing them. I'm just going to post them. So yeah. I've let everyone know that, you know, this is out there. You need to come with your best ideas, because I'm hoping people will watch and listen.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. I can't wait. I'm attending the one on February 1st. So,
boom.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Man, that's good. Tony, I got to click on this here. touchbase.com. So it says you love touchscreen Mac Minis.
Yeah. Now, Patrick, can you go to the Apple website and buy a touchscreen Mac Mini?
You cannot. Yeah, they do not sell touchscreen Mac Books, touchscreen Mac Pros, touchscreen iMacs. They don't. They do not have touchscreen.
So listen up, people. Just like when people told me that I couldn't use a BenQ or what's the other one that's really expensive, the little button control things.
Oh, Barco. Yeah.
To tell one HDMI screen to control another one without a computer in the middle, and I could. I'm telling you that you can do this, okay? So after I achieved transmission from screen to screen, now you're like, Tony, what does this mean? It means that if you find a low-cost HDMI screen that has HDMI output and a little USB for power on the TV, or you just really need an adapter to plug it into the wall, you can get a BenQ, which is the cheaper of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And you can connect the BenQ to that screen, and then you can have a cheap screen that looks really nice that has HDMI input, connect the other part of the BenQ, and it will mirror in 1080p or 4K, depending on which one you get, in real time. That means if you AirPlay your computer to one screen, it will go to the other screen.
Okay.
Yep. Automatically. That means the other screen can be mobile. It just needs power, and you can put it anywhere you want. You don't have to hang it on the wall.
All right.
So I started doing that in classrooms, but then I'm like, okay, what do I really hate? Okay. I hate smart screen software, the smart brand software.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
No.
I don't like how it works. I don't like the touch. And I also don't like how it slows down the machine when it starts up. So I'm like, okay, there's got to be something else that works, because maybe Smart's making their own stuff, or maybe they're just working through a third party. I'm not sure. So I'm researching all this, and I have some ViewSonic touchscreens, and I noticed the driver that ViewSonic has doesn't have their name on it. It had this other company's name on it. So I go to this company's website, touchbase.com, with a hyphen between touch and base, and they make touch drivers for any touch screen in the world. So I'm like, okay. So I do more research. It works like this. If the screen supports touch, and you connect it to an Apple,
yep,
like a Mac Mini, a laptop, whatever, and run their little free driver builder tool, it will then profile your device, profile the screen. It transmits that information to TouchBase, and then they send you a link, and that's your driver, and you have a touchscreen. It's free for 7 days to try, then you have to buy it. So I get these Mac Minis. I dock them on the back of the smart board.
Yep.
I turn off all the smart board stuff. I'm just using the screen. I plug them into the smart board. I start the smart board up so that it you see the Mac Mini when it starts. So it's a full Apple. And then I load this touch system on it, and I installed an Air Server. Now okay. I have a Mac Mini that will facilitate AirPlay between iPads and laptops. You can just show your screen through the Mac Mini, and you can walk up to the board and control it with your fingers.
Ooh.
And I'm using the microphone on the smart board through the same port, the same USB connection.
Yeah.
So if I touch accessibility options on the Mac Mini, I can control the Mac Mini with my voice.
Yeah. Yes.
So basically, and everyone's like, you could do this with Windows 10. I don't like Windows 10 in classrooms either. I wanted to have an affordable way to do this. And why is it affordable? You don't need a smart screen. You just need a touch screen that you can connect the Mac Mini to.
Yep.
And there's a lot of cheap touch screens on the market. So you connect it, then you get this driver, and now you have a massive touch Apple that you can put in your classroom. And so I deployed it in kindergarten. It didn't really give them a lot of training. They have these games they like to play with the kids, and the kids need to use their fingers.
Yep.
So the kids can go up to the board, and it is an Apple, full Apple operating system, and use their fingers and play these games and draw and do whatever.
Nice.
And it
nice.
It is so much better than using like the small computers that are built into these touch boards.
Yeah, and macOS is getting more and more touch friendly. It's getting more and more like iOS. And if you don't believe me, just take a look at Venturi and go to what was called System Preferences, and now it's System Settings. And instead of seeing everything in one window, you have to scroll as if you were touching.
Yes.
And so they're definitely on a touch version. It's just a matter of when they're ready to unveil it for everybody, or you know. But yeah, that is awesome, man. That is awesome.
Is
it pretty affordable, the driver? I mean, you said you get 7 days to try it. Is it pretty? I mean,
so I only purchased a pack of five, and they were 95. They were like, I want to say they were like $90 each.
Is that for a year, or is that forever?
No. You own it.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's a one-time license. And if you were to buy like 100, they will come down on price. I went back and forth with them a little bit.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd like to like add is that if you do think that chat AI bots are the future, then your interface for the classroom isn't going to be a keyboard.
That's right.
So if you have a screen, a lot of these touch screens, again, and you're like, what does he mean by touch screen? It is a screen that lets you touch it. It doesn't have to be Smart Brand or Promethean.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them. There's another website I use to look for hardware. I think it's called touchboards.com. Touchboards. Just double check. Yes, touchboards.com. Go there. They have loads of screens that are just touch capable. So most of these screens either have a microphone built into them, or they have another port where you can plug a mic into the board.
Yep.
So you use the board, you plug like a microphone in if you need to, or speakers or whatever. Then when you USB or USB-C to your Mac Mini, it brings all that hardware compatibility over. So if you're using a chat AI, what you're really doing is you're just talking to your board like, hey, chat GTP, are you there? Yeah, I'm there. Can you look this up? Now, I can already do that, and this is something I was experimenting with the teachers with, and it kind of blew their mind, so I stopped. Okay, this like blew their mind. They walked in for the demo, and I had Chrome up. I was fully logged into Chrome with my profile, and I turned on a Google Assistant in Chrome, like the little microphone at the top.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was like, okay, Google, can you open YouTube and please open this video? And it opened up YouTube and opened the video. Yeah. And they were like, what just happened? I'm like, you can search if you want with your voice. And, oh, sorry. What's funny is my phone's, Google just opened.
I got headphones on. My phone did not hear it, but I'm sure it would have.
So anyway, I was showing him this and I was like, look, let's say that you want to work with your students on their pronunciation and enunciation of language, have them come up and type while they speak. And they're like, oh, I don't know if we can do that. Like, it could be overwhelming. I'm like, okay, I'm just giving you the different ways you can use this system. But I just thought it was awesome. Like, imagine you're busy, you're running around, you just look at the board and you say, okay, Google, open. Oh, it did it again. I got to stop.
Okay.
Open, you know, like whatever, Google Drive, open this presentation, yep. Play it. Once you get the commands down, it's already pretty good for day-to-day kind of navigation.
And you can even you can even throw apps onto, if it's an Android-based operating system like you're talking about, you can throw apps on there as well, and you can tell it to open particular apps, and it will do that without an issue. Yeah.
Correct. And I'm just pointing all this out because the open source, they're not really open source touch drivers, but they're configurable touch drivers. You can use Windows, some Chrome, some Linux, and some Apple backends. You don't have to use Apple. But this company provides a good service, and I'm really just impressed with it. And I'm going to start pushing this as we renovate classrooms. It's going to be a Mac Mini on the back of a touch board.
And that's pretty good, yeah. And if you're buying just a touch board, like a big 55, 70-inch touch board, whatever it is, without the smarts inside of it, it should be a bit cheaper.
And remember, you're using like a full computer. So let's say that you have some kind of older, or maybe not older, but really powerful microscope system or visualizer. It connects to the computer. You don't need the board to understand it.
Yeah.
You don't need to buy like smart $600 visualizer. You can buy ViewSonic's $100 visualizer. So like that's where like this investment in good hardware on the back end. And Patrick, how long is a Mac Mini going to last if you put it on power management so it shuts down at night? What do you think?
I think a Mac Mini could last, I'm not exaggerating here, but I think you could get, especially if you're getting one, an M1 or an M2, the ones that just came out, I think you could get almost 10 years out of a Mac Mini.
I completely agree. And those little computers that are on the back of Smart and Promethean boards, they do not usually last 10 years.
No, I wouldn't think so. In fact, and not only that, but talk about security, what you're talking about earlier, those operating systems that they have in there are usually maybe supported for a year or two, and then that's it. There's no more updates that come to their security or otherwise. And so, like, we have two BenQs, and I think they're on Android 9, maybe 10, but they just don't get updates anymore. They're just, you know, and that's, you know, we rarely use that side of it anyway, because we plug a computer into it or an Apple TV in the AirPlay. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, something to think about. Something to think about.
So if anybody needs any more information about this, and you want to set up like a pilot or a demo at your school, you can reach out to me. I'm not going to charge you anything to give you advice. I will charge you if you want me to remote in and configure it, because that is work. All right. So if you feel like you need that, you know, that's different. But if you just want to touch base and have a chat and have me review like the equipment list, I'm happy to do that.
Fantastic. That's awesome. All right. Well, that is good. And you know, touchscreen Macs are coming.
Yeah. I think you're right, and I think this is just kind of a stopgap. I think you're right. If Patrick's right, if you update to, what is it, Ventura?
Ventura, yeah, it's so, I think 13.
I had my Mac set to auto-update. It's one we use just for presentations, not the one I use every day. And I opened it up to, like, approve a software to install, and I was like, where's that? It took me, like, it's like, where did they move the button? It's a big change.
It is, and it's very iOS-like. There's, you know, when Steve Jobs said that nobody wants to reach across their keyboard and touch the screen, he was right for the time. But now
he was.
Times have changed, yeah. And people, I love touching. I have a Windows laptop. It's touchscreen, and I find it works very well, very natural, and with my daily work, it's good. And putting it on a big screen in the classroom, that's even better. I think that's good. Oh man, awesome! All right, Tony. Tell me about scammers on LinkedIn. I gotta hear about this. What is
okay? So I don't know if scammer is the right word. I don't really know what's going on. So I can't tell if these people have businesses or not because I won't go very deep in their postings. But these people are posting all this stuff, and it seems like a sales pitch, like they're like a consultant or something. And it's ed tech focused, and maybe because I have a lot of ed tech stuff in my feed, that's why I see it. But I'm telling you, it's all like lies. Just like, what's going on? Like, this is easily verifiable. So for example, is one, I'm not going to mention any names or anything. And you know, people might just be promoting their consultancy and not really paying attention. I don't know. But like this dude, he was like listing like the top products that international schools are using. And he's like, he wrote manage back used for curriculum mapping. I was like, ManageBack is a huge LMS, almost an SIS, used to manage like an entire IB program. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Did they add a new feature to that?
And then do you have anybody at your school that uses Formative?
No, but I have heard of it.
Yeah, I have heard of it too. And I've had one teacher in a decade ask for it. He's saying it's a top product.
Oh, like, that's what it is. I know what Formative is. Yes, 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 yes. I've heard of it. Nobody's asked to use it.
So you might say, okay, well, what's the difference between this guy and me? Here is the difference. In one of my networks of technology directors, chief technology officers, there is a person who for the last like 10 years has maintained a massive spreadsheet, and everybody logs in once a year and they update all the products that they use for different categories so that we can see like what the trends are. And if we need to reach out for help, we know which school is using which products. Now, verifiably, meaning updated recently, it's 100 schools, but the total number of schools that have entered data in the last 5 years is like 130. So I replied back to this dude and I was like, I've got a spreadsheet that's updated annually by over 100 schools and this information is just not correct. It's like, I'm just kind of, and I've just noticed like this kind of trend where people are like, are you using these tools because you need to?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, again, maybe it's just their consultancy, but I'm kind of like, this stuff is just verifiable. Like there's you can easily find research on the top school information systems and a lot of this other stuff. And they leave out, here's something else that was like weird. They leave out all the big enterprise stuff like single sign-on, Azure, like all of the big like Meraki, they leave all that out, right? They never mention anything like that. Like how schools are connecting these services, which is actually a really big problem. I mean, you need to basically have a simple way for your teachers to get in stuff.
Yeah.
There was no mention that schools use both Google and Office 365. It was written as they use Google or Office 365. If they're in China, they have no choice. I was like, okay, all of this is not true. So I don't know. This last post, and this is just like one of many. And I'm like, so my question to you, Patrick, is EdTech this big cash cow that we don't know about? Like, what do you think these people are doing? Why is everybody on there just prophesizing about, you know, subscriptions?
Here's my take on it. EdTech was a waning industry before COVID. Like schools were just figuring it out and they were making it work at their own pace. And then COVID hit. And then you were kind of forced into getting solutions, technology solutions to make things work. And for a lot of people, that was, instead of building it or researching it, I have to have it today. I'm just going to reach out and I'm going to purchase these solutions. And so now I think you got a lot of people who were making decision makers and, at schools or districts. And now they're like, you know what? That worked for us. I'm going to go and sell that game plan to somebody else. And I think that's just what they're doing. That's just my take. I could be completely wrong. I think that's what it is. And I think you're just going to have a resurgence of it here, you know, because with subscriptions, you don't really need to know what you're doing. You just need to know how the service works.
I think it was a few months ago, somebody was posting about Veracross and like mm-hmm. I'm not saying Veracross is a bad product. They were posting about the market size, and I normally ignore 99% of any kind of social media post or interaction. I just don't participate. I've been participating a little bit with the chat GTP because I'm working on these webinars and I'm trying to just get some like comments going. So anyway, but a few months, I think it was like 6 months ago, can't really remember. Somebody was posting about how Veracross is like overtaking blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I like posted the number of just schools in the US, entire states that use PowerSchool.
Oh, like, yeah.
This one state has PowerSchool on like 10,000 schools. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Veracross, for people who don't know, is a SIS that's targeted for independent private schools. Like that's their audience. They're not trying to go get into public school districts.
I thought it was disingenuous because I felt like the person was trying to sell something. And I'm like, because they may not sell Veracross. They may sell a product that works with it.
Yeah.
So yep. I thought it was disingenuous to tell people who might be looking for software that this product's taking over. It's focused on a market. It's doing really well. It's not taking over a product that's running schools at the state level that has an entire database for state-level reporting that has to be customized for each state. Like, PowerSchool has a team of people for each state that it serves.
Yeah, yep.
I mean, a team of people per state. This isn't small. This is big.
Yep, I know and that on the listserv, because Indiana, almost every public school uses PowerSchool. Almost every public school. I don't know if it's mandated. I don't think it's mandated by the state. I just think it's just what people use. And when you're talking about those reporting, we have the listserv up that I'm on every year. It's just like, hey, we've got to do our reporting. You know, can I configure this? And can I configure this? Can I do this? And then there's just a million people that are just replying, giving them advice on how to do it. But yeah, it's just
and powerful. One thing that is just kind of in the back of my mind lately, I had a conversation with this guy I know and I've worked with. His name is Greg. He is an expert at scheduling and specifically using PowerScheduler, which comes with PowerSchool. When I mean he's an expert, I mean he's probably the best in the world at scheduling. If you have PowerSchool and you need to make a schedule that's basically automated and does the work for you and you can't get it to work, reach out to me. I will connect you with Greg. He's a magician. And I was speaking to him because a school reached out to me and asked me a really weird question. And I started asking them some questions and realized that they tried to switch to Veracross, couldn't make the switch because they were on PowerSchool and Veracross did not have the same module set that they needed. So I reached out to him and I was like, what is the solution here? What are you giving these? Like, I just want to recommend something for them, like yeah. either a piece of software or is this a job that you can do? You know, yeah, I'm just basically trying to help him out. And he's like, I'm seeing this more and more. Like, people are switching to a product that's not PowerSchool because PowerSchool doesn't post on LinkedIn and talk about their products.
Yeah.
Because they're big and they don't really have to. They probably should, but they don't.
Yeah.
And they switch and then they can't switch and then they get stuck and they can't make their schedules work anymore. And he's like, I just tell them all I do is PowerScheduler. I'm happy to help them with their scheduler. And then they're going to have to figure out how to move the data over later. So what he's saying is they have to keep their PowerSchool license, which is licensed by number of kids enrolled in the system, and their new license, make their schedule in PowerScheduler, and they're not using any other features of PowerSchool, and then export that and upload it into their new system. And he said he's seen it more and more. So I started wondering if this was like marketing going around, like, hey, you don't need this. You need... And I'm like, you know, just do your research. Like, don't base stuff off popularity. Like,
yeah.
Look at your entire ecosystem. Make a list of the business units that use your software, not just your academic units.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely take your time. And I was dealing with a vendor recently. I'm not going to, like I said, we don't call out names or anything here. I'm not even going to tell you about the area. But they were really pushing for a sale. And I was like, look, we're going to get a few more quotes. I want to make sure that this is the right product for us, that this is the right solution for us. And they were kind of put off a little bit. And I was just like, well, you know, man, come on. Come on. That's just being responsible. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm done ranting, Patrick.
All right.
I accept your theory about the ed tech scammers. And they're probably not scammers. They're just trying to, like, sell stuff, you know, with their brand. But
yeah.
Yep. I just, you know, if you're posting, like, whatever, like, if I'm out there and I'm like, I can help you defeat ChatGPT, you know, that's not true.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm like, I've done a deep dive into ChatGPT and it's like stealing your data, that's also not true. I can't prove any of that. I'm just researching it and posting what I'm finding as I go. If I decided to monetize it, I would have to lie. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So just be aware, like, some of the stuff, you really can't monetize it as a consultant. I mean, these companies make it cheap and easy to get their product, and it's pretty easy to set some of this stuff up, or they set it up for you. So just, you know, if you're a school, keep that in mind, because I don't know about you, Patrick, but I think most people in the next, like, 5 years, I think our budgets are going to, you know, go down a little bit, or at least be a little bit more frugal.
I think so too. Yeah, because there was such a big spend back during COVID. I think just to get some balance into school, there's going to be other projects that have to be done that are not tech related, and they need to get that money from somewhere. So, yeah.
Oh, and speaking of scammers, I ordered scammers. Some computers from a reputable company whose name I will not mention. First, I asked for a quote. The quote is good till February 3rd.
Okay.
Because I have to.
So you got a couple days.
I had to get the quote. I had to get it approved. All that stuff. I go to place the order and they're like, oh, well, finance is saying that the price of those units has gone up. And I was like, no, it hasn't. Here's the quote.
You have to honor it.
It took me a week to get them to honor it. So push back, people, because that's happening right now.
Yeah.
People, like, these companies are they're feeling the inflation. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So push back.
Yeah. And they will. Yeah. I agreed.
And you don't have to be rude. Just every email is like, oh, I understand. But do you see where it says on this quote, February 3rd?
Yeah.
Next email. Oh, I understand. Do you see where it says on this quote, February 3rd? Is that a signature?
It's right there.
Hey, is this a – what? What?
Yeah.
Can you read that? Can you read line 10 for me? Just go back, and eventually the salesperson's going to be like, I think they really want that price.
Yeah, and we said we would honor that. That's what a quote does. It's kind of binding in a way. All right.
All right.
Okay, well, that's it. That's all I got, Tony.
All right, Patrick. I'm gonna wrap up here and go watch some Bruce Boxleitner on Babylon 5.
Have fun. Wow. Babylon 5. My wife likes that show. I can never get into it. I can never get.
Oh,
I don't,
come on, Patrick.
I don't know what it was.
A call to arms. Tell her you want to watch A Call to Arms.
Okay.
That's Bruce's best work.
All right. I will put it out there. I'll give it another chance. I just couldn't get into it before. All right. Anyway, for IT Babylon, Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there.